Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, June 4th, 2015. And this says, before the first cup with Jules here on UCY.TV, happy Thursday, everybody. It's almost here. It's 51 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. Supposed to get up to the mid-70s today, so that will be a bonus. No rain, no cold. It's all we can ask for. So where do we leave off yesterday? I hope I'm on air this morning. Yes, I am. I did a whole 12 and a half minutes with my microphone not broadcasting yesterday. So if anybody noticed for the 5 o'clock show, I actually had to re-record the first few minutes of the show. So I had something to put up at 5 o'clock. But today it appears that I am okay. So I titled the show yesterday, and I'm sure that people kind of raised an eyebrow and didn't even click on it, but it kind of made me giggle. Anthrax under every bed where possums and antelope play. We actually took a look at this growing anthrax story, which I noticed really nobody much is speaking about. There's quite a bit more now in the mainstream news, but at least in the alternative media, everyone's just kind of ignoring it. I think it's pretty important because it's one of those things that is happening very slowly, but it's percolating. And I think it could turn into something big if they really wanted it to. We know how they do these setups and then go, whoa, you know, ISIS has it, terror attack. And wait, you know, I was saying over the last week or so that we've been talking about this anthrax story that, you know, in the very beginning when they said, oh, it went to 9 states and I don't remember what it was, 12 labs or whatever in one country, that this is probably going to get bigger, especially when we discovered that the problem was that it wasn't accidentally shipped out. The problem is that they thought by irradiating it with x-rays and or gamma rays that it killed all the samples, and now they find out, oops, that it didn't. I was going through Pigmind's uploads from last night and or this morning, and sure enough, not only were there like 5 stories out of mainstream today where typically there's only been 1 or 2, but it's gotten much bigger. It's gotten much, much bigger. So I think we're going to kick it off today. We're going to look at the growing, percolating anthrax story. I'm telling you guys, they've been pumping us for anthrax attacks since just after 2001, 9/11, and we had, you know, crazy Looney Tunes shipping it in envelopes, and they've tried it a couple times since then. Hold on, let's see if we can get connected here. There we go. All right, we'll disconnect until we're ready. And now, I mean, we are talking, I heard one of the clips, they had said that maybe now, originally they had said it was, you know, looking at shipments back through July 2014 through March or April of 2015 to determine where they sent them and how killed it was and whether or not it was killed. But now they're saying 2006, which is what I said they would say, and I would even say long before that. So let's see. Yeah, I got a couple clips. There was actually a DOD one too, but he pretty much said everything that these ladies said. So let's go. We're going to hear, the next part. We listened to the Pentagon correspondent out of CNN yesterday saying that not only did the DOD ship anthrax to its own facilities at the Pentagon, but she works in the Pentagon, and they had not told anyone officially in that building even that they had received a potential shipment. And what caught me also as kind of strange is that they were sending them willy-nilly to these different groups, and at the Pentagon it happened to be the Pentagon Police Department. And like I said yesterday, what are the, you know, what they're using them to calibrate their equipment according to the quote-unquote official story. But I mean, how much anthrax, killed or live anthrax, do you need to calibrate equipment? And are they doing it on a daily basis? I mean, to me, this just seems like overkill that you're shipping this material that is supposedly so dangerous as a bioweapon all over and then not using a proper chain of command. I mean, even though they said it's killed, like we discussed in the very beginning, just like a firearm, you always treat it like it's loaded, not ship it in freaking baggies, which we find out now they're shipping it in liquid form or something. But I mean, they shipped it via FedEx. How crazy is that? So here, we're going to hit this first link. Let me connect. Live anthrax may have been shipped to the Pentagon. And wait, was this? This was yesterday. Never mind. We're not going to listen to that one. All right, here. Anthrax now sent to what? Da, 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 da. Yesterday was 28 labs. It's now doubled to 51 labs. Yes, 51 people. Here we go.
The numbers are growing, Brooke. A Pentagon news briefing for reporters ongoing at this hour. Let's circle back and tidy up some of the numbers here. Okay. It turns out, and they are changing every day because the Pentagon still does not know more than a week later the full scope of the problem, right?
Ding, ding, ding. Now that's a problem in my book. The numbers are changing every day and they don't know the scope of the problem. And in one of the clips we heard yesterday, they actually said that they're not even sure what went wrong or how this happened. I mean, they think it's that it's not being properly killed, but we're not certain.
Now, 51 labs in 17 states, plus the District of Columbia, plus three countries.
Now, 17 states, not the 12 that we were originally told either,
have received suspect shipments. Even that Pentagon lab, which is located near the Pentagon, actually, suspect shipments that may be live anthrax, because what they've discovered is when they sent these samples out all over the country, the anthrax had not been killed off in some cases. Two of them already confirmed to be live. But now 51 laboratories, 17 states, and they have to go back through everything they have. The Pentagon already saying they think those numbers will grow, that these shipments had been made almost to every state in the country, many shipments overseas. So now they have to take, it may take weeks at this point to understand the full scope of the problem. They have to go back.
Now, I don't know about you, but it's going to get bigger to every state. I mean, come on, people. This is a setup if I ever saw one, is we have ISIS under every bed, and now we have freaking live anthrax spread all over the country. I see New York happens to be one of the states here, too. Great, thanks. All over the country, at least three other countries besides the United States. I mean, seriously. And this is the Department of Defense that's keeping us safe. Yeah, I believe that one, like I have antlers.
Back through, test it all. See, once and for all, what is out there that is live anthrax? What is dead anthrax? Right now, they do not know. The Pentagon saying there is no health threat to the general public, but they certainly have to figure out if any of the hundreds, if not thousands, of lab workers that came into contact with this material are facing any problems, and already some 30 people are undergoing what the Pentagon says is precautionary medical treatment, some medication, some vaccinations, that sort of thing.
Yes, yes, medication and vaccinations. They've been working on that anthrax vaccine. Remember, we found out watching a video from the CDC 3 years ago that they have anthrax vaccinations in the strategic national stockpile. So good for them. You know, make you wonder how long it's going to be before they decide that we all require a prophylactic vaccine to protect us just in case. So now Charlie Rose weighs in on the situation.
Today, the Pentagon said it does not know for sure how many labs were mistakenly sent live anthrax instead of inactive samples. But it was quick to say there is very little chance anyone was infected.
Yes, we do not know. We don't know what's live or what's not. We don't really know where it's been sent yet. But don't worry about it. There is no reason for concern because there's no chance that anyone's going to get infected. Just don't worry about it.
David Martin has the latest.
The number of shipments of potentially live anthrax continues to climb. 51 labs located in 17 states, the District of Columbia, and three foreign countries. And Deputy Defense Secretary Bob Work admitted that is probably not the final count.
We expect this number may rise because the scope of the investigation is going on.
Why does it take so long to figure out where a supposedly tightly controlled substance like anthrax was actually shipped?
Right.
Good question, reporter. Oh, my God. I can't even believe. I mean, either these people are the most incompetent idiots on the planet, or this has to be, I mean, this cannot be an accident. We're talking like one of the level one bioterror agents that they've been hammering on for 13, 15 years now. Like, look out, there's going to be an anthrax bioterror attack, and you are just spreading it wantonly all over the place. And now you're like, whoops, we're not really sure where it went to.
Right now, what's causing the problem is it takes days in some cases to determine if any of the lots that we are testing have any live anthrax in them.
So far, four lots or batches have been found to contain live anthrax.
So that's a new number. Four lots, not two. That's what the last report said, were two.
Even though they had been irradiated and then tested to make sure the spores were dead.
We actually issue a death certificate that says this organism is now dead.
Well, that makes me feel safe.
Dr. Franca Jones demonstrated how each sample was then packaged for shipment in a liquid form, which is less infectious than powder, and inside multiple containers.
Yes, inside a cardboard box with styrofoam, inside of a plastic container, and inside that plastic container, it's in a baggie. She's showing on stage how they're packaging it.
We believe that the risk is zero for the general public.
Yes, and she looks very convincing saying that, not.
Well, as for the people who have handled this box.
Pentagon officials also said the samples were too small to infect a healthy person, but 31 lab workers who were exposed to the anthrax are taking medication as a precaution. Charlie?
Thanks, David.
And what's such a crock of shit there is that the samples were too small, except that the video that we watched from 3 years ago from the head CDC guy, and maybe I'll dig that one back up again. It's in the notes of the show from a few days ago. He had actually said that all it takes is a few spores, and I mean, you can infect all kinds of people. All right, I got one more. I pulled three clips, but there were probably five or six from last night. This one looks like it's from ABC News. So we did CNN, CBS, and now we're going to do ABC. Let's see what their take on it is.
The new numbers tonight, and they are eye-opening when it comes to that anthrax scare. Many more samples sent out than first thought. The Pentagon sending out live anthrax by mistake, FedEx, from one base in Utah. At first, we were told to labs in nine states. Well, tonight comes word, samples sent to nearly twice as many states, 17 now. Let's get right to ABC Senior Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas in Washington. And let me get this right, Pierre. 51 labs now instead of 18, as we first thought?
David, that's right. 51 laboratories, and that number could go even higher as the Pentagon looks at shipments dating back to 2006.
Bing! 2006! Wait, we were told it was 2014. I mean, this is just... I honestly, this morning, I got up early. I was so beat last night. I did an 18-hour day, and then yesterday was just technical issues galore. So by 5 o'clock, I said, forget this. By 8 o'clock, I was out cold. And I got up bright and early this morning, started coffee at 6:30, and I've been digging through news. I was flipping out. How can we possibly go from no worries? So it was nine states, 18 labs, and now we're talking 17 states, 51 labs, three countries.
Officials suspect that the irradiation process that was supposed to kill the live anthrax spores did not work. Today, Defense Department officials demonstrated how anthrax samples were shipped by FedEx. Vials of anthrax placed in sandwich bags, put in plastic containers, and then stored in boxes with dry ice, and then sent on their way.
There you go. So vials with anthrax put in Ziploc bags into a plastic container and then into a box. Whoops, I missed the dry ice part. It looks like styrofoam packing peanuts in there. And then they shipped it via FedEx. How many FedEx workers are going through high security checks to make sure that they're not ISIS? This is just insane. I can't even believe this.
And they insist was safe, David.
Making the case that it was safe in the meantime, Pierre, how many people are now on antibiotics as a precaution?
So far, nobody is showing signs of infection. 31 people now protectively on antibiotics, 8 civilians, and 23 DOD employees. Officials are confident there were not enough live spores in any specific shipment to make anyone sick, David.
All right, Pierre Thomas following this from the start. Pierre,
yes.
Thanks.
All right. So there weren't enough live spores to make anyone sick, except we don't know what happened. And we don't know what's live or how much of it is out there. So, hey, I believe them, right? Don't believe anything they tell you. Now, even more interesting, I mentioned a story the other day about South Korea, one of the countries that received the anthrax. They sent it to, trying to remember now, I thought it was a naval base, but I think we ran across it in a story that it was a an Air Force base, an American Air Force base in South Korea that received one of those shipments that happened to be live. South Korea was pissed when they found that out because it did not appear to me that the South Korean government was aware of the fact that we were shipping anthrax there. And apparently now South Korea is having an outbreak of MERS. If you remember, it was that upper respiratory infection that a lot of the Middle Eastern countries were coming down with a while back, some of the African countries. And during that one, oh, I don't remember what the gathering is called, but it's the mass Muslim gathering that happens every year where they go to, I think it's Saudi Arabia, and MERS was running rampant at the time. You know, it was kind of curious to me, made me raise an eyebrow. I was like, oh, how interesting that this disease is hitting all of these Middle Eastern nations. Well, now there's a big outbreak in South Korea, and South Korea is going, hey, U.S. military base, how do we know, you know, where, first of all, this MERS comes out of nowhere, and how do we know that it doesn't have anything to do with some substance that you shipped the military base? There was a story that came out this morning that I ran across. 1,369 people are now in quarantine in South Korea as the outbreak grows.
So, Kathy, we know that two people have unfortunately died from this, but what are South Korean authorities doing to contain the virus?
Well, Zane, with this news of the two deaths, they have stepped up the efforts to try to stop this from spreading any further. In the past week, we were talking about dozens of people quarantined, and now, as you mentioned, almost 700 have been quarantined. The president herself admitted that there were insufficiencies when it came to the initial response of health authorities, and now they are working hard, having emergency government meetings and set up a task force to do everything they can to stop the disease spreading any further. We also know that one of the people who ended up being diagnosed with MERS ended up leaving the country and is now in China. So, of course.
Oh, great. Typhoid Mary left the country and is now in China. And how interesting, as we have this outbreak, now they are implementing quarantines. I'm telling you, we've been watching all of these outbreaks for quite a while now, since last summer, as a matter of fact, at a granular level, and some of the executive orders, actions that were passed. And one of them was a quarantine for communicable upper respiratory diseases.
Of course, fears of that spreading across borders, and there are moves, suggestions from health officials that the government should do more to stop people who are currently under quarantine from leaving the country, Zane.
And Kathy, you mentioned that President Park said that there were insufficiencies in terms of how it was handled during the early stages. So what did authorities do wrong exactly?
Well, it seems that they didn't do enough, they admit. They have apologized for this to stop the initial spread. This came from a man who had been traveling to the Middle East. He came back to Korea. He was feeling unwell, and later it became clear that he did have MERS. Now, most of the people who have since contracted the virus can be linked back directly to him. So
well, there we go. Apparently, they decided not to blame the American government.
The suggestion there is that not enough was done to contain that first patient and then to quarantine the other people who had come in contact with him. The fear now is that two of the latest cases out of the 25 are not linked to that first patient. They're actually linked to someone who contracted the virus from him. So, of course, the fear is that that disease is spreading further and that they don't want it at all to get out of control, of course. What officials are saying is that they are expecting more cases to be reported, but that so far they are contained to people who had some kind of contact to a medical facility. So they hope that they are not going to be reporting this spreading in the general public.
Yeah, it's all about trying to contain the virus in the early stages. So this is a relatively new virus. We first saw headlines about it back in 2012. So just three.
Now, by the way, it says right across the bottom, no vaccine exists to protect against MERS. You know, it really makes you wonder, as we have this biopharma medical industrial complex that has been clamping down, and we had the whole vaxxer versus anti-vaxxer wars going on here in this country, if this isn't all some big sort of global now conglomerate. You know, I mean, remember, too, we have all this nanotech that's going on, RNAi and these new vaccines. If this isn't some whole big global conglomerate that is really trying to pound it into everybody's heads that there is a danger from these pathogens, they're everywhere. You know, next thing you're going to hear them say is it's global warming. And we all need to line up as a global community to keep us all safe and get our vaccines. Shut up and stop arguing.
Years ago. Just give us a sense of how contagious it is and how high the death rate is.
Well, scientists are still trying to figure out how people contract it to begin with, but obviously it is a virus now spreading person to person that does have a relatively high fatality rate. According to the CDC, about 3 to 4 people out of every 10 die, and there is no vaccine and no cure. So that's a lot of what is causing this alarm, Zane.
No vaccine, no cure. Certainly people are worried over there. As you mentioned, 2 people now dead. Let's hope that the virus is contained. Okay, Kathy Novak, live for us there in Seoul. Kathy, we appreciate it. Thank you.
And what I love is, you know, how many of these, now she had actually said, and maybe I can back it up to there. I didn't look at the timestamp, but she had said that this came out of nowhere, I believe. Hold on.
Are not linked to that first patient. They're actually linked to someone who contracted the virus from him. So, of course, the fear is that that disease is spreading further. And then
now, people to people, of course, that starts to mean pandemic.
They don't want it at all to get out of control, of course. What officials are saying is that they are expecting more cases to be reported, but that so far they are contained to people who had some kind of contact to a medical facility. So they hope that they are not going to be reporting this spreading in the general public.
Now, you remember, too, when this first happened, just like with the Ebola, and they told us that it was the infected fruit bat. And remember, they found the fruit bat tree and they cut it down. MERS, when MERS first came out, they're like, wow, we don't really know where this came from, but we think you got it from camels. It even says that here, research shows camels may be the source of infection.
Yeah, it's all about trying to contain the virus in the early stages. So this is a relatively new virus. We first saw headlines about it back in 2012, so just 3 years ago. Just give us a sense of how contagious it is.
So relatively new virus. We first saw it in 2012. And if you remember, it was in the Middle East. You know, anything like this to me is absolutely suspect. These viruses just appearing out of the blue and then becoming so infectious. And you know, they're trying to tell us that it's our environment that's causing this. But look at now. So there's no vaccine. There's no cure. And what do we just see? 2 new tick-borne viruses in the United States. There was that Paswan. And I don't remember what the one was called that killed the guy in Kansas, but the Paswan was the one that was in Connecticut that they found. Again, no cure, no vaccine, and people die from it. There's a very high rate of death. What in the 21st century, as we have Bill Gates running around with his philanthropy, you know, coming up with vaccines for all of these massive diseases across the world to eradicate, like we said yesterday, polio, malaria. Yet we have things like this that come out of the blue and what? Nobody's sequencing anything for real? I mean, they're using it, to me, it appears that they're using it as fear porn to get you scared, to make you want a vaccination and to frighten you into submission. All right, that's enough of that. That really pisses me off now when I see not just 1 but 2. And I'm sure that we're going to see more anthrax in the coming days. We watched a video clip yesterday about the antelopes as well. Here, let me kill Skype. And the antelope story actually bothers me more than these other two. I mean, the anthrax story, I say wait and see, but it doesn't look like this is going to have a happy ending, like I said, with terrorists under every bed. But that antelope story was so disturbing. 120,000 antelopes died in 10 days, and it wasn't from something infectious, they don't believe, because it wasn't like one was catching something from another. They just all basically dropped dead. It was one third of the entire global population of that Sega antelope. That has to be a telltale sign that something is very, very wrong. But hey, don't worry, because guess what? Scientists have now developed self-healing robots. Yes, they have. Scientists developed self-healing robots. Scientists have created a small robot that can recover from damage in a step toward machines that mimic the remarkable adaptive powers of humans and animals. So, hey, once we get killed by pandemics, don't worry, because the robots can self-heal. The feat would one day lead to a first responder robot, which can cope with dangers that today would put them out of operation. The idea is to have robots that can survive in hostile environments such as, yes, Fukushima-type nuclear disasters. That's a good reason to have self-healing robots like Terminator, if you remember that. I don't know. To me, this, I was like, self-healing robots, bad idea, number 2,875. I want to be able to break them if need be. Quote, if we send in robots, they have to be able to pursue their mission even if they are damaged and not just come to a halt in the middle of a reactor, he told American Free Press. The researcher published, or the research, sorry, published in the Nature of Journal, the Journal of Nature, is inspired by the learning abilities of the natural world and isn't anything that is becoming cyborg-ish. Something that they've based upon nature. That's what I really hate. This is like a perversion of nature. They're taking all of the things that millions of years of evolution have perfected, and they're bastardizing it, turning it into something that can be used against us if need be. It says, if a dog hurts its paw, for instance, it will seek to move differently to avoid putting pressure on the painful wound. This adaptive skill comes from experience, from knowing how the body moves and exploring the options that are available. This is what Moray's team sought to replicate in a powerful computer program to guide a six-legged, 50-centimeter walking robot. The core of the program is to build a knowledge base for the robot of how it moves and to assign each of these movements a value as to how useful it could be in a crisis. The values are rather like using intuition. In the case of an injured dog, the animal knows that to walk again and has to learn how to shift its weight around. Behaviors such as sniffing or wagging its tail are rejected at this time because they will not help, and the values are then used to guide what a learning algorithm, yes, it's all about the algorithm, called intelligent trial and error, that conducts experiments to see if compensatory behavior will help the robot to continue its mission even when damaged. Using it, the prototype robot found a way to keep walking even after a couple of minutes, even when two of its legs had been broken. Now, I don't know, man. I start getting visions of, like, trying to outrun one of these suckers at some point in the future, doing whatever I can to take this sucker down. And no matter what I do, that thing just keeps getting up and coming after me. I mean, honestly, isn't this the thing that nightmares are made of? Why are we doing this? Yes, because it's all for our safety and to rescue you in a disaster. Quote, if one behavior does not work, the robot is smart enough to rule out that entire type of behavior and then try a new type. For example, if walking mostly on its hind legs does not work well, it will next try walking mostly on its front legs. So we have a handstanding robot. And what is surprising is how quickly it can learn to walk a new way. Yes, that's just so amazing. It's amazing to watch a robot go from crippled and flailing around to efficiently limping away in about 2 minutes. Oh, yes, my blood pressure is up now. Good morning. I just can't stand this stuff. And every day, every single day, it gets worse than it was yesterday. And if it could even get worse, look, Facebook is now doing research on artificial intelligence. Oh, hold on. We got to connect. Here it comes. Maybe. Oh, did I just say the wrong keywords? Well, maybe. I hate this. It only takes, what, 31 minutes of me blabbing this time. Well, hold on. We'll log into the other machine because I will not be thwarted. If I can type. All right. We'll have to circumvent. Hey, look at that. Uno momento, por favor. I got to bring myself back online. And let's kill this. And we will try the other connection. Here we go. Let's connect. All right. There we go. Okay, where is it? Where did I put that one? Scroll down, scroll down. Oh, wait, I might need to refresh the page. Still is all my news from yesterday is the top. And where are, yes, here we go. Facebook doing research on artificial intelligence. And I don't know, I might have to read. It's not loading on either machine now. Well, screw you, Facebook. No, here it comes. Somebody gave it a thumbs down. I love when people do that. They don't like the story, so they give it a thumbs down. Come on! Now not even YouTube is loading on two machines. That's awesome. I just love that. All right, well, you know what? We'll save that one. So if we can get there, we will. Where do we go from here? The Large Hadron Collider, of course, fired up at the early hours of yesterday morning, I believe. It's 7 a.m. Central Time. So that was 6 a.m. Eastern yesterday. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any weirdness in the sky or if things disappearing that maybe should still be there. I don't know. That collider, man, just to me seems like a bad idea. Another one, bad idea number 2782. They are probing to see if they can find dark matter. And one of the things that I had read about dark matter is that dark matter has a lot of properties that we don't quite understand. And to me, that's just like rolling the dice, looking for trouble. If we try to call the demon that we don't understand and we get it, then what do we do with it when it starts eating things alive? You know what I mean? Not good. And this mad science has just got to stop. And it's happening from every direction. Actually, here's a story. If this loads... And, oh, Jesus Christ, now even stories won't load. Well, oh, hold the phony. Am I on air? Maybe. It almost doesn't appear so, but I better be. Hold on. I can't even scroll now. I Twitch. Anybody? I Twitch. Oh, come on. You know, that's an easy way to thwart me is just take out my internet surfing abilities or allowing anything to load. I mean, I fully admitted I don't do this from memory. Are you kidding me? Like, literally everything just died here. Two machines. All right, let's go to machine number three. And I'm getting DNS probe not started on two machines for no reason whatsoever. So hold on. We're going to machine number three so I can at least read a story. I need to log in. All right. See, we logged in and the page loaded on machine number three, connected to the same router on the same network. No problem whatsoever. Let's go back to the same page. And let's scroll. Oh, look, it all works. Let's scroll. They haven't tagged this MAC address yet as being danger. Okay, so we got this third machine is now loading the story that won't load on the other two. This one, I actually read this to my daughter. I heard it on a show I'd been listening to a few early mornings ago. And just like the one that we heard back last week about the cyborg beetle, if you remember that one where that scientist was all giddy about sucking out the guts pretty much of this beetle. They sucked out the nerves and the nerve endings, the brain, and they were able to remotely control its muscles and, of course, use a joystick to use the cyborg beetle to scan disaster areas looking for survivors. It was really horrifying because, think about it, it's a living creature regardless of what you think of beetles, which I'm not really a big bug fan, but it is a living creature. And the ethics of taking a living creature, sucking out all the stuff that literally makes it alive, and then enslaving it. I mean, this thing was still alive and enslaved, and you could see it like struggling. It was moving its legs like, hey, how come I can't fly over there? And they're remotely controlling this thing. Well, even more bothersome is the story that I heard about a couple mornings ago, and I actually found it. It's from August of 2014, titled Cyborg Moths Can Be Controlled Mid-Flight by Scientists. Now, okay, no more disturbing than a cyborg beetle, except that when you start reading about how they created these cyborg moths, and then you remember a story that we talked about a few weeks ago with these new nanowires and being able to embed them into brains, and of course they're using them on like not PTSD patients, but military who have been injured, who maybe have lost the use of their legs or arms due to injury. They were able to fix physical problems by inserting these nanowires into brains and like hijack the nervous system. Well, check this out. It says moths are way cooler than butterflies for a lot of reasons. This is out of Motherboard. From Vice magazine, vice.com. So, you know, whatever you think of Vice. Moths are way cooler than butterflies for a lot of reasons. For one, they're fuzzier and hence cuter. Haha, aren't you funny? But also, they can be implanted with electrodes and controlled en masse to surveil swaths of land for people in trouble. Of course, again, it's to find people who need help, like a fleet of insectoid cyborg Lassie clones. Now, let me read that sentence one more time, because that, to me, gave me chills down my arms. It says they can be implanted with electrodes and controlled en masse to surveil swaths of land for people in trouble, like a fleet of insectoid cyborg Lassie clones. Beep, 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 beep. You know, they're doing this research on insects and animals right now. How long do you think it's going to be? And injured military, how long do you think it's going to be before this is something that becomes a commonplace implant, let's say? Well, you know, first when you're injured or you're dying or, I don't know, you have Alzheimer's, they're going to tell you they can fix you that way. But maybe then it's going to become augmentation in the future. Then maybe forced augmentation, right? All right, a little bit more. Researchers at North Carolina State University have developed an approach to creating cyborg moths that can be remotely controlled by implanting electrodes deep into their indirect flight muscles when during its pupal stage, okay? When it's a baby, they insert these electrodes into their muscles when it's a baby while it's still in the cocoon. That way, when the muscle fibers of the developing moths grow around and with the electrodes, So they literally put these electrodes into an infant bug, and then it grows with these electrodes in it. It says it results in a flying bug that can be controlled with electrical stimulation after it emerges from the cocoon. Now, if there is not a breach in ethics, I don't know what is. I mean, again, not that, you know, I feel sorry for moths, but this is a living creature. It is a living, breathing creature. And we're turning it into a cyborg. How is that even allowed? Well, it's for the good of the people. It's, you know, the death of the one is for the good of the many, and it can be used to surveil large swaths of land for people in trouble. So it should be allowed. It's okay. So says you. It says the end goal, the researchers say, is to develop a fleet of moths, a fleet flying in swarms, no less, that could be useful in rescue scenarios. In the big picture, we want to know whether we can control the movement of moths for use in applications such as search and rescue operations, says Dr. Elper Bokertz, author of the study published in the Journal of Visualized Experiments. Quote, the idea would be to attach sensors to moths in order to create a flexible aerial sensor network that can identify survivors or public health hazards in the wake of a disaster. To achieve this futuristic vision, the researchers are currently investigating how moths can be controlled in large numbers. And besides allowing the moth's flight to be controlled, the embedded electrodes also allows for an electromyographic signal, which are the electrical signals given off by muscle activity, to be monitored mid-flight. Bokertz and his colleagues stuck a test moth inside of a magnetically levitated test chamber so as not to disturb or impede the moth's flight, and then they commanded the moth to rotate itself in midair while collecting the EMG data on its muscle movement. By watching how the moth uses its wings to steer in flight and matching those movements with their corresponding EMG signals, we are able to get a much better understanding of how moths maneuver through the air, and I'm sure that probably the next step is going to be robo-moths. So that's great, but so far the moths do not have cameras attached to them, which you'd presumably need in order to have them be useful for search and rescue or for surveillance. So, guys, they're working on surveillance moths. Come on. I just can't even get over the garbage that I read on a daily basis. And people will not believe you if you try to tell them this over a beer. I'm telling you, they will not. The North Carolina State's team is the latest in a string of recent attempts to hack insects to do our bidding. For instance, you can hack a cockroach and control it with your smartphone for under $100. Previous studies have put moths at the helm of tiny robot cars to allow researchers to follow them to find the source of their pheromones. Bokertz and his colleagues are confident that their contribution to the burgeoning field, yes, the burgeoning field of cyborg insects is an important step toward creating a fleet of surveillance moths, which is quite a terrifying thought. Well, at least they mention that in this article. And of course, there is much work to be done, but now we have a platform for collecting data about flight coordination, said Bokertz, and the next step includes developing an automated system to explore and fine-tune parameters for controlling moth flight and furthering the miniaturizing of the technology and testing the technology in free-flying moths. And then, of course, the cameras. The idea of thousands of cyborg moths with electrodes protruding from their thoraxes surveilling us from above is equally as terrifying and, this author says, cool as hell. But hey, that is the future for you. Ha ha ha. Well, I don't want that to be my future. So now we got to figure out how to kill cyborg moths too. I think I'm going to get one of those big zapper tennis rackets and short circuit the cyborg moths. Like, how frightening is that? So now what? All of a sudden, you're not going to know whether a bee or a moth or a fly is a real bee, moth, or fly, or some cyborg freak that's recording all your conversations? Talk about paranoia to the nth degree. This is just not cool. Absolutely not cool. All right, it looks like I have internet back, so we're going to try to play this clip about Facebook now doing research on artificial intelligence. Maybe this will play.
Dude, artificial intelligence one day controls social media.
Well, Facebook is expanding its research into AI. It claims the research could make its services even better. CNET senior editor Jeff Bacalar is here with more. So, yes. Jeff, what's up? What is Facebook's ultimate goal here?
I think what they're trying to do, and this is not something new, they've been working on this for years, what they're trying to do is streamline their algorithmic process.
Bing, 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 algorithm. I mean, really, that has to be the key word here of 2015. It's all about the algorithm.
That Facebook analyzes data, news, things that people post, their the facial recognition technology.
Yes, bing, 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 Fedbook.
They basically just want to make all of this sort of offload on an AI, quote-unquote, sort of technology.
Yes, so they are working very hard to integrate themselves with all of the surveillance apparatus out there to make it much easier using artificial intelligence to know everything and anything about you.
Not too different than what it actually operates on now. This is just an evolution of how that goes. It's all about getting a more seamless, quicker sort of experience on Facebook.
But could AI get its hands on even more personal information than a human could?
Yeah, definitely.
Hello, yes,
and then take over.
And then we'll take over just the world. Be right. Enslaved by our robot Skynet. Overlords.
Right.
Yeah, essentially that's what they're trying to do, the way it's set up now. I mean, again, Facebook pretty much operates on this almost autopilot setup. This will just take things to the next level. Yeah.
So they've opened up a research lab in Paris. They've already got a couple in other places. What's the significance of that?
Well, believe it or not, Europe has way more Facebook users than the U.S., which I did not know.
Wow,
until
I did not
this
know
morning.
That. We're huge in Belgium.
It's just this gigantic presence there. So, you know, they obviously want to have some sort of headquarters located in Europe. You know, there's a lot of different sort of privacy laws in Europe than there are here. So they're facing a little bit of controversy with existing in Paris. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But they definitely need a presence there. You know, the way it's been working over here is sort of they have an AI office in New York and I believe one out in Menlo Park in California. So the idea is to like sort of get this global sort of focus on AI as it pertains to how Facebook interacts with its European users.
Gotcha.
So I don't even know what to say. Oh, hold on. Let's get this disconnected. I don't even know what to say. I mean, it is all going to AI, cyborgs, and it's happening faster than we ever imagined. This was a story at the very end of the show yesterday that had I not lost 12 minutes of the show, I probably would have been able to cover. Be careful with your face at airports. We had looked at a story about how the TSA has apparently failed 95% of all of the airport checks for weapons, right? Again, another agency that, quote unquote, is supposedly keeping us safe that has just failed miserably in what they've been or not even been tasked with, what they tasked themselves with. 95% of the time they were able to smuggle weapons and contraband in past TSA agents. Even one guy, I think in the story, had said he had something taped to his back and they missed it. So bend over because here it comes. But here's a story. Be careful with your face at airports. We talked about facial recognition. It says you're late for your flight, you're sweaty from having dragged your luggage to the check-in counter and stressed about making it through security before boarding begins. For some of us, this is the rule, not the exception. And for most of us, it's a pretty unremarkable scenario, but not so fast, says the TSA. Typical airport behavior like this could make you a suspicious traveler who should be subjected to questioning and additional screening and possibly referred to the police for investigation, detention, or arrest. Now, what? Yes. Do you remember back a few years ago when they put out, like, I don't even remember what the number was. There, in the end, probably ended up like 120 keywords or physical body reactions that made you suspicious. Well, here it comes in practice. It says, this should seem far-fetched, but it isn't. The TSA continues to use pseudoscientific behavior detection techniques. Behavior detection techniques, people. Behavior detection, pre-crime. That have given rise to persistent allegations of racial and ethnic profiling at all of our nation's airports. Through a program called Screening Passengers by Observation Techniques, or SPOT for short, the TSA employs thousands of, quote, behavior detection officers, unquote, who scrutinize travelers to look for signs of, quote, malintent, unquote, in airport screening areas. The officers typically spend less than 30 seconds scanning an average passenger for over 90 behaviors that the TSA associates with stress, fear, or deception. And when the officer perceives clusters of such behavior in any given individual, they refer that person for secondary inspection and questioning. Now, can you believe this? Like, this is out of a CNN story from March 19th of 2015. So this isn't something from a few years ago. This is just a month and a half ago. The SPOT program relies on theories about micro expressions, which are involuntary facial expressions that supposedly appear for milliseconds despite one effort to conceal them. And you know how they get these? It was from using the facial recognition software and artificial intelligence, and they run all this stuff through the database and use an algorithm to determine what these, what they used to call, like in poker games, would be a tell, right? When people lie, you know, they don't look you straight in the eye, or they might have this eye twitch or turn the side of their mouth down. There's all kinds. You know, you can look into deep into psychology. Everybody has a tell, especially when they lie. Well, they've automated all this now, made a list, and apparently have trained an army of, what did they call them? Hold on, I'm trying to see. Behavior detection officers. The SPOT program relies on theories about quote-unquote micro expressions, which are involuntary facial expressions that supposedly appear for milliseconds despite one's effort to conceal them. Behavior detection officers look for such micro-expressions while scanning passengers' faces or engaging in casual conversations with them. And it is as nutty as it sounds. Setting aside that the officer's perception of these behaviors is inherently subjective, yeah, hello, can you say that? There's just no evidence that deception or malcontent can be reliably detected through observation, especially in an unstructured setting like an airport screening area. Exactly. Who feels, you know, and when you're being scrutinized, you know, when you know that you have somebody sitting there watching your every movement and facial expression, how at ease are you actually going to feel with somebody? The fact that many people find such settings, here we go, inherently stressful only compounds the problem. If the TSA's behavior detection officer looks for stress in a stressful environment, they're going to find it, along with plenty of false positives, which, of course, to me, sounds like job security. Just about everyone outside the TSA who has reviewed the SPOT program has decided that it is unscientific and a waste of money. Yeah, just like everything else, apparently, that the TSA does, since they miss 95% of any of the orchestrated threats that have been executed to test the TSA's ability to catch quote-unquote terrorists. An exhaustive review by the Government Accountability Office found that the SPOT program lacked a scientific basis and that the behavioral indicators it relied on were subjective and that the TSA had no effective means to test its effectiveness. In no uncertain terms, the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, recommends that Congress curtail funding for the program. Now, what will be interesting to see is whether or not they decide to put AI on the behavior detection services. I'm sure that they are running something like that already in the New York City and the Seattle Cyber Patrol Center, where they have bazillions of cameras all over the city looking for suspicious behaviors. During a congressional hearing on the program, Republican Representative Richard Hudson of North Carolina observed, quote, "To my knowledge, there has not been a single instance where a behavior detection officer has referred someone to a law enforcement officer and that individual turned out to be a terrorist." So bravo, representative from North Carolina. Representative Michael McCaul of Texas, a Republican chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, stated, quote, "I am concerned that the TSA will continue to spin its wheels with this program instead of developing a more effective and efficient approach." Well, of course, and especially, like I said, if it keeps their jobs, despite the withering criticism, SPOT remains in place and has cost taxpayers well over $1 billion with a B dollars since 2007. Oh my God. Repeat, over $1 billion, which we always blow $1 billion on this and that, on a misguided program that does not work. Surprise. And there's more, but I mean, do we really need to read more? This is making my freaking eye twitch. Oh, and last but not least, I don't know. Let's see. Let's take a look at the...
Circling the skies across the country, the FBI is operating a small air force. The Associated Press has learned that the FBI has been using scores of low-flying airplanes with high-tech imaging devices, all registered to fictitious companies.
People for years, if going back more than a decade, have been concerned when they see these low-flying airplanes circling above their house, so much so that some people even call 911 and ask the police, who is this person circling above?
The AP traced at least 50 aircraft back to the FBI, including this single-engine Cessna spotted at a regional airport in Northern Virginia.
The key thing on that aircraft is that if you look on the left-hand side, there's like a white basketball-looking object. And what that is a camera, so when the plane makes a 90-degree...
And there we go! All right, guys, make sure you stick around. Mr. Kevin Blanch up next. Mr. Chuck Cocelli live at 6 behind the woodshed with Hal Anthony, Devin Frost, with Chuck and Anthony Media with SMP.